NFL dollars? And if so, how should they handle it? And then, is there any college player with more to gain by playing the season than this quarterback? The answer may well be no, and you'll find out why as we get up with you starting right now. And a very pleasant good morning. We thank you for getting up with us at ESPN. I'm Mike Greenberg from Bristol this morning, and we are very busy. We have all sorts of news about the return of not one but two sports in this country that may very well be on the verge. But we start with Get Up and Go, take you through some of the news of this morning. And this from Adam Schefter in just the last few minutes. NFL players are not expected to return to their team facilities until training camp, Schefter says, though discussions are ongoing and no official camp dates have been announced. Commissioner Roger Goodell has also informed teams they must hold their camps at their main practice facilities, which will mean no joint practices, among other things. Major League Soccer and their Players Association appear to be close to an agreement on economic concessions for 2020, as well as revised terms to their collective bargaining agreement. That deal would pave the way for the league's return-to-play tournament in Orlando and end the threat of a lockout. Elsewhere, more than 120 Louisville student-athletes, coaches, and staff underwent drive-up coronavirus testing upon their return to campus yesterday. The school is set to begin volunteer physical activity on June 8th. And a Florida state court judge ruled yesterday Zion Williamson must answer questions under oath regarding whether he was eligible under NCAA rules while he was playing at Duke. Williamson's attorneys are expected to file an appeal. And all of that brings us to the news from the NBA, where Commissioner Adam Silver is expected to have a proposal to take to a vote of the league's Board of Governors tomorrow as the league gets closer to firming up return-to-play plans. And there's some very interesting news from that, and the man with the news always, of course, is our Adrian Wojnarowski, who joins us live. Good morning, Woj. So they're set to meet tomorrow, and I have been looking at some of your reporting on what will be in this proposal, particularly as it involves dates and timing. Let's talk about that.
Greeny, October 12th, teams have been informed, would be the last possible day of the NBA season. A Game 7 of the NBA Finals would be pegged to that day. And, so it essentially gives you the framework in the 22-team model that the league has been focused on and moving toward bringing to the owners on Thursday. So you would have a July 31 opening tip, and potentially an October 12th end date of the season, and then you'd have your draft and free agency in sequential order after that.
So that's fascinating, because obviously one thing shifts and it moves so many other things. So we'll be talking about the draft and free agency, and then when would they be considering starting the following season, if indeed that is something that they've already decided, because it feels like this could have a domino effect that could last a very long time for the league.
Yeah, the start of next season, essentially probably no later than Christmas Day. And, the league's not going to want to lose the impact of having those December 25th games. And it leaves you a very tight window, especially for the teams that advance to the finals from the end of one season to the start of the next. And, you would have to believe that if you're going to play games on Christmas Day, you've got to be starting training camp right around Thanksgiving, and free agency essentially wouldn't start until November 1st, maybe October 30th or 31st in that time frame after the draft. If you look at how normally the days in between, from the finals to the draft to free agency, and so you may still have players assembling onto rosters as training camp is starting next year, and it's going to be certainly a tight squeeze for the NBA, but with 22 teams versus, let's say, a 16-team format, if they just brought the playoff teams back, Greeny, I was told that calendar would have not gone to October 12th, but they could have finished up a season around September 24th or 25th, but the fact that the league's moving toward the 22 teams, which means also regular season games, play-in games for the eighth seeds, and then the playoffs, that takes you to the middle of October.
Well, there's no question. You'll have the news on this as we go. And again, tomorrow is the day that Silver will present this to the owners. And very quickly, October 12th, I looked it up. It's a Monday.
The Monday night football game that night is Chargers-Saints, in case anyone's wondering. Woj, outstanding. Thanks. We'll check in with you again as we continue. Then we get to the news from baseball, which is also very significant this morning. Still locked in contentious negotiations between the owners and the players on an economic split. Yesterday, the owner of the Chicago Cubs, who's a very well-known figure, that's him right there, Tom Ricketts, told our Jesse Rogers that the public should not assume that baseball teams are flush with money. Here are some of the quotes. He said, here's something I hope baseball fans understand. Most baseball owners don't take money out of their team. They raise all the revenue they can from tickets and media rights. They take out their expenses, and they give all the money left to their GM to spend. I think there's a perception that we hoard cash and we take money out, and it's all sitting in a pile we've collected over the years. Well, it isn't. Because no one anticipated a pandemic, no one expects to have to draw down on the reserves from the past. Every team has to figure out a way to plug the hole. And then here's the big quote. The scale of losses across the league is biblical. Here is Jesse Rogers, who had that interview with Tom Ricketts. Jesse, what more can you tell us about the situation that the owners find themselves in, sort of using language that most people can understand?
Well, Greeny, it wouldn't be the first business, big business, that didn't have cash. You know, I think of the airlines. If it wasn't for the optics, I wouldn't be shocked if the owners asked for that $1,200 stimulus check from the government. But obviously, there's a divide here. And, you know, maybe they don't have a lot of cash. I mean, the one thing he said in there is reminded us all that the season shut down at the worst possible time before any revenue streams could be realized, right? So maybe they don't have a lot of cash. But here's the thing. The players don't care. A certain amount of players may not believe them, but I think even if a majority do believe them, they just don't care. That's not on them to figure out, meaning the players. The owners have to figure this out. Ricketts mentioned in that article that they've already borrowed to get through part of this season. Well, maybe they need to borrow some more. So that's the divide here. The players just don't care if the owners don't have cash, whether they believe them or not.
Yes, I hope everyone was able to read on the screen there what Hembo just popped up, because most fans will look at that and they'll say, I don't want to hear you don't have cash on hand when you bought something for $700 million and it's now worth $3 billion. There has to be a way to figure out a way to float whatever cash you need through this season. All of that said, for all of us, Jesse, who just want to see baseball this summer, what are the steps that need to be taken right now for these sides to find some sort of middle ground?
Well, the good news is they didn't propose that revenue sharing thing, so that's a positive. The good news is they each have offered up how many games they want to play. So they put something out there in the public sphere, and now they just have to find that middle ground. The players, for the first time, used the D word, deferrals. I actually think that's something they need to lock in on, both sides. We'll give you 50% now. We'll give you 25% in 2021. We'll give you 25% in 2022 of the 50% prorated salary for the 82 games. There is a middle ground to be found. It's weird, though, Greeny. The more games they play, the owners say, the more they lose. That's unusual. And I tend to believe them, or else they'd be suggesting more games. So maybe the answer is somewhere between 50 and 80, full proration with deferrals. I mean, I'm not a labor lawyer, but there's got to be a middle ground to be found, because here's the thing. The alternative is awful. Not playing a season can't be done. That can't be the result of this thing. So work backwards from that and find the solution. There's a middle ground. It just has to emerge at some point here.
So let me ask you to do what all reporters hate to do, and that is guess. In your best guess, will there be a baseball season of some sort this summer?
Yes. Now, 2-3 weeks ago, I would have put it at 85 to 90%. I've come down from that, but I'm still well over 50%. Let's say it's 60-40 that they play. I think the owners will end up winning out in some manner. They usually do. The problem is 2021 and 2022 may not be much better for the players. I think that's why they're trying to stick to their guns now. Hey, we have contracts right now. Pay us now. We'll worry about the future then. And by the way, a lot of people are worried about 21. They just can't deal with it just yet.
All right. That's my buddy Jesse Rogers in Chicago. Well done, Jess. Good to see you, my man. Thank you very much. Meanwhile, there's other news on this day, of course, across the world. Protests about the death of George Floyd continued in cities across this country yesterday. And at one of them, former NBA star Steven Jackson was there. He was a longtime friend of George Floyd's, and he spoke at the family press conference in Minneapolis.
Why is it not that simple when somebody's getting videoed and getting murdered? Why is it not that simple? Why do we have to see her pain? Why do we have to see a daughter getting raised without a father? But you know what? It's a lot of stuff you said that he gonna miss that I'm gonna be there for. I'm gonna walk her down the aisle. I'm gonna be there for her. I'm gonna be here to wipe your tears. You dig what I'm saying? I'm going to be here for you and Gigi. Floyd might not be here, but I'm here for her. I'm here to get justice, and we're going to get justice for my brother. We're not leaving. We're going to keep fighting.
In Houston yesterday, Texans quarterback Deshaun Watson attended a march that was led by members of George Floyd's family. Meanwhile, in Ann Arbor, Michigan, head coach Jim Harbaugh of the Wolverines took part in a rally to show solidarity between protesters and government officials. In Dallas yesterday, Mavericks legend Dirk Nowitzki and head coach of the Mavs Rick Carlisle assisted in the cleanup efforts, sweeping broken glass from businesses that had been vandalized and looted. And Boston Celtics head coach Brad Stevens wrote a letter of support to his team after several players participated in protests over the weekend. Here's more reaction from around the world of sports yesterday.
This is the first time I think the country is doing it all at the same time. Never seen it in more than one city. It's just that, you know, we're tired. You know, when I say we're, it's just, you know, people that are standing up for people, especially the young African-Americans, they're just tired. They want equality, that they want justice, and I understand.
It's our responsibility. We've started this problem, we've perpetuated it, and we're in positions to make changes. And I think when people look at us and say, you've got this power and you haven't done anything, not just people in sports, but any people who have gained a status or power in our society and you haven't done anything, of course there's going to be frustration, and of course it's going to lead to the type of protests and more that we have seen over the past week.
This is an uncomfortable conversation for a lot of people, and I think this is where, you know, sports is so unique, the huddle. And when you think about a huddle in football or in life, people come from all different walks of life and different beliefs, but they come in there and they have this conversation of what it's going to take to be successful. Not only as a football team, but in life. And I think until we can get groups together and have a conversation, then we always run to our corners and say, this is what it is. We got to get together. We got to huddle up as a country and talk about these issues so we can progress.
Chargers head coach Anthony Lynn is one of four minority coaches in the NFL. He said this to the LA Times, "I haven't done anything to make this a better place for my son. I remember having the talk with him when he was 16 about how to handle police. And then at age 30, I called him up and just had the talk with him again because I'm so scared. I want to do something, but to be honest with you, I don't know what that is. You can't just stand on the sidelines and just watch. You got to say something, man. I don't want to be doing this again 20 years from now. And so I'm looking for ways to sit at the table and have a conversation about this broken system." We will take a short break here. We have much more to do this morning as we get up with you. One division, three Heisman Trophy winning quarterbacks. Where do they rank in the AFC North? We will talk about that in just a moment. And then if the NBA does resume, should LeBron James get special treatment, the sort of which you might not be expecting, but it will make sense as we roll on. You're watching Get Up on ESPN.
It's your home speaking, and I need you to do me a couple of favors. First, could you get that blueberry that rolled under the fridge last week? It's throwing my feng shui off. Second thing, bundle your home and car insurance with GEICO. It's easy, and we could save money. Lastly, I know you were thinking of painting the nursery back to off-white, but I'm actually feeling this baby blue. Didn't think it was my color, but I am pulling it off.
GEICO. For bundling made easy, go to geico.com today.
Foot odor throwing you off your game? Stick to a winning game plan with Odor Eaters, featuring three advanced odor and wetness fighters. The lineup provides long-lasting odor control plus more to keep your feet on their game.
Odor Eaters powder provides outstanding moisture control. Clear drying spray is the MVP in preventing athlete's foot, while insoles work continuously to manage wetness while adding a layer of comfort. Pick up today at Walmart, Target, CVS, Dollar General, or other fine retailers.
Odor Eaters. Destroy foot odor with the best in odor defense.
We are back on Get Up. And you know, the AFC North, as we project towards next season, has fascinating quarterback questions. It starts with Lamar Jackson, who led the NFL in total QBR and passing touchdowns last year. And he was just simply brilliant. He was the second unanimous MVP in the history of the sport, joining Tom Brady in 2010. Then there's Ben Roethlisberger. He played just two games last year and then had elbow injury that required a season-ending surgery. He led the league in passing yards, however, the season before. Then the Bengals, they now have Joe Burrow. It was the fates of the franchise, and last year he threw the most touchdowns and finished with the second-best completion percentage in college football history. So he's coming off a huge year, but of course is a rookie. And then there's Baker Mayfield, who'll be playing for his fourth head coach in three seasons in Cleveland. He was the number one overall pick. He threw 22 touchdowns and 16 starts last year. Mike Tannenbaum had these thoughts yesterday.
If we were drafting the AFC North quarterbacks for 2020 only, arguably, Cleveland has the worst quarterback. You have a healthy Roethlisberger, league MVP in Lamar Jackson, and Joe Burrow, who had a historically great season. So while they're improved, I think they maybe have the fourth best quarterback in the division.
That was fascinating yesterday, and these two guys are here to talk about it with me this morning, Dominique Foxworth, Rob Ninkovich. Rob, I will start with you. If you were going to draft the four quarterbacks in the AFC North for this season, not long term, because obviously Ben is much older, but for this season, in what order would you take them?
All right, so we all know what number one would be. We know that. That's given, right, in Jackson. Number two, you got to go Big Ben. The body of work that he has so far, I understand he has the elbow, but you got to go with Big Ben. So number three, look, has Baker Mayfield ever played better than what we saw from Joe Burrow last year? He has never done that. So number three for me is Joe Burrow. And then number four is Baker Mayfield. He has to show me more. When I watched tape from last year, very inconsistent, played well against teams that he should have played well against. And then when there was a test on the line and he had to play against a hard team, like, say, the Patriots, you know, we remember that fumble that he had. Look, that play in particular, I remember that is pretty embarrassing. So when you are in the NFL, you're going to be critically looked at and scrutinized. And I feel like last year, it wasn't a great outing for him. He had some flashes of greatness, but then a lot more of just question marks. We don't know. That's why he's number four for me.
Right. That's interesting. Dominique, what do you think?
Yeah, it's hard to argue for Baker coming off of that, but I feel like I have to. Like, I understand that Joe Burrow had the greatest passing season of a quarterback we've seen in college football, but it is college football. And I know Baker hasn't been great often, but last year they knocked off the Ravens. They went into Baltimore and Baker knocked off the Ravens. I understand that's just one game, but the Ravens were the best team in football last year. So I think I would still probably put Baker fourth, but I feel the need to defend him in some ways. I think Lamar's number one. Obviously, and then I go with Ben Roethlisberger at number two because you're right about the body of work. I think I'm going to stick with Burrow at three because his potential, I think, is so high, and go with Baker at four. But I think we might be singing a different song at the end of this coming season. I like to think that Baker will get better under a better head coach and more stability and a team that knows each other a little better. So I like to say that Baker is going to get better. And we haven't seen Joe Burrow play in the NFL at all, which I guess is a plus. But we've seen Baker play well in the NFL, though it hasn't been consistent. That's something that you could hope he can improve upon. I'm putting him at four right now, but maybe he jumps to three or two after this coming season.
Can I say something in defense of Baker Mayfield? And I grant that last year was just a complete mess for the organization from top to bottom, and he deserves his share of responsibility for that. But if you look at the two seasons prior to his arrival in Cleveland, and then the two seasons that he has played, they have literally won 13 times as many games in those two seasons that they did the two before. They were 1-31 in the two seasons before his arrival, and they have won 13 games and tied another with him as their quarterback the last 2 years. Is it fair, Rob Ninkovich, to be putting all of the weight of what has been the worst franchise in the sport by far on that kid after everything that happened last year?
Look at the roster. Look at his roster. He's stacked, loaded. You got OBJ and you got Landry together on the same team. Like, come on. If you had those guys together, if you're Tom Brady, what are you doing with those guys? I mean, tearing up people. So I just think that the team has so much talent.
He was a victim of expectations.
I mean, he's got talent.
I think last year. I understand that he has a lot of talent, but Greeny's right. You can't put it all on him. They are better, and you can't give him all the credit for the fact that they have 13 times more wins. Like, he doesn't get all the credit or he doesn't get all the blame. I do think he has a lot of traits that make me excited or interesting. Well, to be fair, he has one real good trait: accuracy. I think that the other traits are issues, but there's nothing more important in my mind for an NFL passer than to be accurate consistently. He wasn't that accurate last year, but he's been accurate. He's been incredibly accurate. If we're in college, if we're basing Burrow's projection on his college career, you can look at what Mayfield did in college. It was pretty impressive, too.
I will 100% say it again. He's going to have a big year, and they're going to make the playoffs. Write that down. As we continue this morning on Get Up, they play for the best teams in the NBA. So should Giannis and Kawhi and LeBron get special treatments when the games resume? We have some very interesting ideas for ways that may work. I think you'll enjoy it. We'll do that with Jalen when he joins us next. And first, Jalen, we'll take this shot at Sneaky Hembo. Which NBA player has the longest active streak for appearing in the playoffs? The answer's next.
GEICO gets you access to licensed agents 24/7, which means that GEICO is always there for you. If only everyone was always there for you. Like your mom, when you fill out really, really important paperwork on the first day of a new job.
Name? Check. Birthday? Social security? Is that a thing? Hey, mom, what is my social security number? Mom? 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 Okay, let's guess. 0017. Oh, Gemini. Hashtag. Done.
GEICO. Always there for you with savings and 24/7 access to licensed agents.
We are back on Get Up. Jalen Rose will join us shortly, but first, let's talk about Justin Fields. He was a Heisman finalist a year ago in his first season as the starting quarterback at Ohio State, compiling 41 total touchdowns and 3 interceptions, as he led the Buckeyes back to the college football playoff. And while Trevor Lawrence is being hailed by many as the next coming, consider what Justin Fields has done. Last year, he had more touchdowns, fewer picks, and a higher completion percentage than Lawrence. And right now, Caesars has them currently in a dead heat to take home the Heisman next season. And we have much more on him from Laura Rutledge, who joins us this morning. Laura, Justin Fields, a remarkable story. He could be headed for an enormous season.
Yeah, and in fact, Greeny, I would predict that he's headed for an enormous season. Just a few weeks ago on this show, I predicted that Justin Fields will win the Heisman. I think he has such a high ceiling still left, and a lot of that could be accomplished this year at Ohio State.
The transfer portal has been kind to Justin Fields. From a situational quarterback.
A true freshman, a lot to learn about the offense.
He's not going to unseat Jake Fromm.
Everyone wishes they have more playing time.
To a Heisman finalist and starter in the college football playoff.
Fields, touchdown, Olave!
Fields rode a rocket ship from Athens to Columbus. Justin Fields owns the second highest career QBR in the history of the metric. Tua ranks first, and those are the only players above 90. The eye-popping numbers don't stop there. Fields is the only FBS quarterback to throw at least 40 touchdowns in a season with 3 or fewer interceptions. Still, this rocket ship can climb much higher.
He can do things like Mahomes did at Texas Tech.
I feel like I'm looking at Cam Newton.
Remember, Ohio State built a 16-0 lead over Clemson in the Fiesta Bowl and led the game inside 2 minutes. 2020 is the year Fields can finish the job. And how about this? If he wins the college football playoff and the Heisman, is Justin Fields the new number one overall pick?
So that's the big question when it comes to Justin Fields and Trevor Lawrence in the 2020 season. I spoke to a couple of NFL scouts just the other day about these two. They still all say that Trevor Lawrence has a slight edge over Fields. But if Fields has a monster year, which he's capable of, especially in a second year in Ryan Day's offense, who knows? You might see a team end up taking Fields ahead of Lawrence.
I agree with you. I think there may not be another player in the sport who has more to gain by the season being played this year than Fields does, who will still be a high pick either way. But I agree with you. I think it's not inconceivable he could move all the way to number one. Now, Laura, stand by, because this we planned on talking about this at some length this morning. But there's another college football story that we need to share, and that is about Clemson assistant coach Danny Pierman, who acknowledges using a racial slur in a 2017 practice. This yesterday, after several former Clemson players recalled the incident on Twitter, and former tight end DJ Greenlee confirmed the story to the state newspaper. Pierman apologized for the incident. Here is his statement. He said, 3 years ago on the practice field, I made a grave mistake involving DJ Greenlee. I repeated a racial slur I overheard when trying to stop the word from being used on the practice field. What I overheard, I had no right to repeat. While I did not direct the term at any player, I know there was no excuse for my using the language in any circumstance. I never should have repeated the phrase. It was wrong when I said it, and it is wrong today. I apologized to DJ at the conclusion of practice, who then appropriately raised this concern to Coach Sweeney. The coach and I met to discuss the incident, and he reiterated that my language was unacceptable. I later apologized again, as well as expressed my sincere regret to our position group the following day. Dominique rejoins us here, Laura, and Paul Feinbaum is with us. And Paul, I was just getting some notes during the break on some people that you have been speaking to, parents of the coaches and players involved here. I'd love you to share whatever it is you can report for us.
Yeah, what's really interesting, the player who brought this out in a post is the son of one of the legendary Clemson players of all time, Perry Tuttle. He was the star of Clemson's national championship team in 81, and he told me this morning he stands by his son. He'll have a further statement later. And another conflicting thing here is, where is Dabo Sweeney in all this, Greeny? Dabo Sweeney, I think, is very conflicted because he played for Danny Perriman at Alabama. Danny was an assistant coach there under Gene Stallings for 7 years. Danny Perriman's also an executive. He's on the board of the American Football Coaches Association. He's well-respected, but so far his response, I think most people are going to find to be very lame.
Dominique, I wonder your perspective on this as we watched this story develop yesterday. What thoughts were going through your mind?
I mean, to be honest with you, I don't care much what happens to Danny Perriman. Like, this is the old racism sleight of hand where you find somebody who's said or done something super racist and everyone says, look, over there, and distracted from what's actually happening. And I'm not going to let people off the hook that easily. Just because you can find someone who said a bad word doesn't mean that there aren't more pernicious things taking place that need to be addressed. And I'd rather look at Dabo Sweeney like Paul just said. I think Dabo has an opportunity right now. And football coaches often talk about sacrifice and how you got to sacrifice for the greater good. And I think this is their time to show us. And Dabo, I'm speaking to him and all the other coaches at Power Five schools. This is your time to show us. You always talk about sacrifice for what you believe in, sacrifice for what you care about. I expect them to sacrifice in this moment and do something. Use this opportunity to move us forward, whether it's something big like standing for or demanding some police reform in South Carolina, or it's something smaller like doing weekly book clubs on social media about reading books that deal with social injustice, something. Like, I expect them to do something, and something that causes them to make some sort of sacrifice, because that's what shows me what you really believe in. You can say what you want, but what you do is what matters. And I expect them to do something. All of the coaches, not just Dabo Sweeney, but all of them. I expect them to do something, and not because they have to engender themselves to future recruits to find the next person that's going to power them to a big contract. Not because of that, because it's the right thing to do. And coaches so often use religion and Jesus and church to galvanize their group. Like, this is an opportunity. I'm pretty sure that Jesus would step up in this moment, and your religion would require you to step up in this moment and do something about what you're seeing.
Laura, these are such extraordinary times. No one talks to more coaches and players and administrators than you do. What sorts of things are you hearing in those conversations?
Well, Greeny, I think it's really interesting to hear what PJ Fleck has been doing, because he is the guy that's coaching Minnesota's football team, of course, the state where George Floyd was killed. And he said that his team is about 50% black and 50% white. And one of the things that was really important to him is getting all the parents on a video call together. And I realize it would be more impactful right now if they could all be together, but that's just not the case in what we're dealing with currently in our country and in our world. And so they were on this video call together, and he said it was really important to make sure that every single parent that would be available would be there. He wanted the white parents to hear from the black parents and vice versa. And he said it was a really important conversation that they walked away from. And so that's one thing, and that's what Minnesota's doing, and I think that's something that we'll see a lot of these other schools doing. I did talk to one player this morning at a different school who said that they've had a number of conferences and a number of chats with their coaches in the wake of all the recent news, and that his own mother said that she really never saw an opportunity for this type of progress, that she was amazed that this was happening right now. That really hit him hard, that he was doing something or being a part of conversations that his mother didn't think would be possible in her lifetime.
As we cross over the top of the hour, let me briefly just welcome the audience that may be joining us here. I'm Mike Greenberg in Bristol. This is Get Up, and we're with you every morning on ESPN. It's sort of an unusual time this morning as we were following a baseball game in Korea. And as we continue this conversation, I'm told Jalen Rose is listening, and we were going to bring him in to talk about some NBA coming up in a moment, but he wants to chime in. So, Jalen, if I have Jalen here, I would love to bring him into the conversation if he's there. Okay, Jalen Rose, go ahead. I know you've been listening to the conversation. What would you like to add?
Good morning, teammates. And It was great to hear each of you echo your feelings about what the coach said in practice and how Dabo Swinney responded. And I appreciate what Dominique had to say about he wanted to hear Dabo's opinion, and Paul said the exact same thing. But it's already too late. The cover-up is worse than a crime. It already happened. It already happened. So anything that gets said from now on is fake. It's phony. If we can brush it under the rug, we're going to do it. And guess what they've been doing since 2017? Brushing it under the rug. And yes, Dabo has a terrific football program that creates so much equity and finance for the university, for the city, and stuff like that. But I do remember him being one of those coaches, because I was keeping score, that said he would not stand for any one of his players taking a knee when Colin Kaepernick was doing it. Now when I see that visual that's taking place around George Floyd, they mirror one another. Your move, Dabo.
Now, I don't think that we need, this is not enough. Or this, if you haven't been following Dabo Swinney, maybe this introduces you to some of the things that he's done or said. But he's also been outspoken against paying players, calling them entitled if they expect to get paid going forward. So if you needed a reason to not feel great about his positions, this is just another one on top of it. And I do think that maybe he's not comfortable going out and addressing major issues of social injustice, but he can commit himself to creating opportunities for Black coaches. He can find ways to make a difference, to make a change, and show that this stuff is important for him. And I'll end with this. I know that on social media, a lot of people have been leaning on Dr. King quotes and cherry picking them to kind of villainize the people, or to vilify the people who are trying to make some progress. And I think one of the quotes that has not been used, but I think should be used more often, is Dr. King said that the hottest place in hell is reserved for those who remain silent in times of moral conflict.
We're going to move on here in a moment, but I do feel the need to ask, Jalen, first you, because you played a long time ago, comparatively speaking, and of course, you know, times change and things like that. What is being suggested was said on the practice field at Clemson. Is that something that you ever witnessed in your career? And I'm not talking about from fans or in the terrible mail that you would get and all that kind of stuff during the Fab Five. But at any time when you were playing from within your own organization, is that something that would be completely out of bounds at any point during your career?
That's definitely out of bounds, Greeny. Now, I was in college at a time where Bobby Knight was throwing things on chairs, and he was also being physical and disrespectful to a lot of his players. And all of those things have been documented. But for this circumstance, the learning was to take place in 2017 when the player and the coach both went to Dabo and told him, the leader, what happened. That was the crucial moment. That was it. And they lost the moment, Greeny. That was the teachable moment right there. So anything that gets said after the fact, all it is PR spin. That's exactly what it is. And lastly, I have to just say this really important. In a time where race relations have been heightened, I want to make sure that I acknowledge that I'm one of the voices that do not want people with racial overtones, undertones, feelings in their heart. You know what? I don't want them to be silent. Speak as loud as you want, because I want to know who you are. So many times that behavior has gotten closeted and we truly didn't know who felt a certain way. I would rather know how people feel. And so this is another example of that to me. This was a learning experience for a collegiate head coach. Something happened on the practice field, and instead of using it as a teachable moment, they continued to cash checks on the backs of all of their players.
Paul, did you have something you wanted to add here?
Yeah, I just want to say I've known Danny Perriman for about 30 years, and I sent him a note this morning, curious, not asking him for a public statement. He already gave it. I was just saying I'm about to go on. I would like some context. I was hoping, guys, that and Laura, that he was going to say, listen, I'm deeply regretful. I'm so sorry. This was a bad moment. I apologize even more profusely. He didn't do that. He sent me a text back saying, if you need any further comment, here is the contact information for the sports information director at Clemson, which shows me he doesn't get it that somebody issued a statement for him. And I thought it was a minor thing, but it was a communication with someone he's known a long time. And he couldn't even bring himself to apologize in a text or a phone call saying, listen, I just want, you know, here's how I feel. You know me. You've known me for 30 years. So I think he's failed. And I agree with Jalen and Dominique in terms of Dabo Swinney. Dabo Swinney can wrap himself in anything he wants, but he is losing this one very badly.
Okay, we will take a short break on that thought.
Rini, can I just say one thing?
Yes.
I'm sorry, really fast. Just because I want to make sure that we are fair in reporting all the facts here, I think that Dominique made a really important point about Dabo maybe needing to have more black coaches and it being more inclusive from that standpoint. I just want to make sure that everybody does know that while he has more white coaches than black coaches, he does have black coaches and people of color on his staff. I'm in agreement with what you all are saying, but just want to make sure that is out there.
I looked at his staff. He does have plenty of black coaches. But the point I was making was to that he should advocate for change going forward and create opportunities for
Absolutely.
Black coaches. And frankly, as it pertains Absolutely. To Danny Perriman, like, I don't know him. I don't care about him. It seems like he is irrelevant in the grand scheme of things. I just don't want us to get caught up in pointing at him and say, hey, look there, we found the racist, and not be aware of the things that we do that are more pernicious and perpetuating the culture that subjugates black people. That's all. And I know Dabo has black coaches on his staff, but he can do more, just like many other white people can do more, frankly.
There's no way in the world I'm going to turn this into an NBA conversation here. So let's leave it for a moment. Jalen, stay with me. All of you, thank you very much for your honesty and your openness and your emotions. That's what this is for. That's what this time is. That's what we're living through in America right now. And if it is, I think that in the long run, if our program can be a place where people can voice their feelings and their emotions honestly, then I think we are doing a lot of good if we can make that happen. So we'll continue to do that here every single morning. In the meantime, I will take a short timeout. We'll come back. We'll talk about some of the return plans for the NBA. Jackie McMullen will join us, and Jalen will be here as well. You're watching Get Up on ESPN. We'll be back in just a moment.
GEICO gets you access to licensed agents 24/7, which means that GEICO is always there for you. If only everyone was always there for you. Like your mom, when you fill out really, really important paperwork on the first day of a new job.
Name? Check. Birthday? Social Security? Is that a thing? Hey, Mom, what is my Social Security number? Mom? 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 Okay, let's guess. 0017. Oh, Gemini. Hashtag. Done.
GEICO. Always there for you with savings and 24/7 access to licensed agents.
We are back on Get Up, and Hembo has a question, and let's see how Jalen goes with this as we are now heading towards the NBA playoffs. Jalen Rose, which NBA player has the longest active streak for making the playoffs?
I like how now the questions are shotgun to me. I don't get a chance to even breathe. I love it. Longest active streak appearing in the playoffs. How about LaMarcus Aldridge?
That's an interesting guess. The answer is J.J. Redick, and I thought you might get it because he talks about it all the time, and there was enormous conversation about whether the Pelicans would make it this year or not because he was there, and obviously you and I have a lot invested in that because we have our suit.
You got me, Himbo.
Yeah, and I'm telling you right now, if the Pelicans make it to Orlando, Jalen Rose, you owe me a suit. But that's something we'll talk about in a moment. Meanwhile, I want to get Jackie Mack in here, and I want to talk about this. Adam Silver is likely to move forward now with a 22-team restart plan despite reservations from several of the owners, particularly those from small market teams. Woj is with us earlier this morning. He had this to say on where the league stands right now.
Rini, October 12th, teams have been informed, would be the last possible day of the NBA season. A Game 7 of the NBA Finals would be pegged to that day, and you would have a July 31 opening tip and potentially an October 12th end date of the season, and then you'd have your draft and free agency in sequential order after that.
That's a fascinating timeline. Jalen is here, and Jackie Mack joins us for the first time in too long. And Jackie, let's go through that, because we're talking about a significant change to the NBA calendar that will have ramifications well beyond this season. A July 31st start date and a potential October 12th Game 7 of the NBA Finals. What, in your mind, would then be the domino effect of all of that? How would this play out for the NBA?
Well, Greeny, I think it's been the worst kept secret around sports that the NBA has wanted to have their starting to the season go later. This, to me, clinches it. They're going to start at the following season, Christmas at the earliest, maybe even into January. And there's been discussions about that for a long time now because of how the NFL dominates the fall season. But if you take it forward, what that brings you to, if you do the math, you're talking about an NBA Finals next year, somewhere in August, maybe even September. So this brings up all sorts of questions. For instance, what about the Olympics? Now, I know there's a chance the Olympics will not be held next year because of what we're dealing here with the pandemic. But let's just say, for argument's sake, they do. How are NBA players going to participate if they're in the middle of probably what would be the early rounds of the playoffs? So there's all sorts of ripple effects here.
Lots of moving pieces here. But, Jalen, you for a long time have been saying you want the season to start on December 25th. You might get your wish.
Absolutely. And Jackie Mack, I think how they will remedy the Olympics, instead of taking the elite players that are either in the playoffs or advancing in the playoffs, I think we should challenge ourselves as a league to take people on teams that didn't make the playoffs and see if they can still go win the gold medal. As it relates to resetting the NBA schedule, I know, Greeny, players will not like this overall if this is something that happens moving forward, because when the season ends, you get a chance to spend time with your family when they're out of school. So now resetting this schedule, I think it's better for the NBA's business, because those students that are not in school, you hope to now become NBA fans. So this has to be a two-season, 12-month plan, and I like the way it's looking so far.
All right, now the next thing I want to get to here this morning involves all these teams that will be coming back and how you sort of give a reward to the teams with the best records, okay? So Dave McMenamin wrote a piece for ESPN.com in which he got into some details on how the league could incentivize advantages for teams that earned home court advantage, right? So just sort of imagine this. You got a team like the Bucks that might have had a 20 games better record than the Nets, and now in theory they're going to be playing on the same floor with no fans and all the rest of that. So some of the things they're talking about include awarding the better team, the higher seeded team, the ball to start the second, third, and fourth quarters, giving extra coaches challenges, things like that, all the way to letting them fly in their actual hardwood home court, or getting to choose which hotels they stay at first. What, Jackie McMullen, do you think of all of this? How should they give a reward to teams that earned home court advantage and will not get it in Orlando?
Well, Greeny and Jalen, I was one of those people that said this should not be an asterisk season, because whoever can navigate these unprecedented times deserves to be champion. But if you start giving extra possessions and letting teams pick their opponent and all of these things that Dave outlined, which, by the way, were definitely floated by some of the top teams, I'm jumping off the asterisk bandwagon. But I will tell you this. I've spoken with a couple of people this morning who have knowledge of these discussions, and they tell me not to worry. These things are not going to come to fruition. They aren't going to happen. Too gimmicky for this league, who's already added a play-in to their postseason plans.
Yeah. How about you, Jalen? I had seen one of them that said maybe you could designate one player to get 7 fouls instead of 6 fouls before he fouls out of the game. Jalen is shaking his head.
If that happened, I'll walk on water barefoot. That will not take place. Because, like Jackie Mack just said, now you create a gimmick, which is now a sideshow and a question mark. So now it's one thing if the Lakers, Bucks, or the Clippers win it, but all of a sudden, if Orlando Magic win it, then people are going to be like, oh, no, that's an asterisk, no question about it. So I don't anticipate a lot of these things happening in the NBA. Let me tell you the distinct home court advantage. Do not get it twisted. First and foremost, yes, it's the fans. Yes, it's the convenience. Yes, it's the support. But you know what else usually helps at home? When you have LeBron and AD, Kawhi and PG, when you have Giannis, and then all of a sudden your role players play a lot better in front of their home fans. That's the home court advantage that no team is really going to be able to capture, because they're going to be at a neutral site.
Right. So, Jackie, is there a way of giving some benefit to these teams for what they have earned over the course of a long regular season that isn't gimmicky?
I can't. I mean, I guess if you wanted to fly your court in and put the Milwaukee Bucks logo in the middle of your court, if you think that's going to help you, I wouldn't really object to something like that. I think the players and the teams have to understand This is an extraordinary situation. The fact that the NBA is even playing is extraordinary. And I do think the one thing that's gotten lost in all of this, Greeny and Jalen, is remember when we were talking about how this had to work? What was the primary concern? Safety. When's the last time you've heard that in the last week to 10 days? Everybody's so busy now trying to get an advantage. I haven't heard anybody talk about safety in quite a while. And yeah, that should be the primary concern of these players and the NBA.
It's sort of the ante, right? If they can't get the safety piece of it, you can't do any of the rest of it. But if they can get that right, then we can actually get into this.
Exactly.
That is a lot more fun. Jackie, awesome to see you. Thank you. Jalen, thanks. We're back shortly. We'll do a whole lot more as we continue. Thanks, it's just the beginning of what is a very busy day here on ESPN, as we will be followed by First Take this morning. Again, a special time. We're all shifted around a little bit with the baseball. And then SportsCenter follows that. NFL Live, The Jump. And then Jalen and Jacoby, highly questionable, around the horn. SportsCenter with the PTI guys. And then SportsCenter with SVP, a full day right here on ESPN.